This is exactly right.
Hello. We want to take a second to tell you about one of our favorite podcasts, Disgraceland. If you like music, pop culture, and true crime, this is the podcast for you.
Through host Jake Brennan's deeply researched storytelling, you'll hear all about the lives and crimes of musicians like Jerry Lee Lewis, Jay-Z, the Rolling Stones, and so many more.
And now Disgraceland is expanding to include artists, actors, athletes, and other icons from Anthony Bourdain to Andy Warhol.
Full episodes are released every Tuesday. Check out Disgraceland on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen.
Goodbye.
Welcome
to My Favorite Murder,
the mini-sode.
It's so teeny tiny. Look how cute it is.
Oh my God. It's just, it's like it goes right on the top of your pencil. I was trying to make, George, I was trying to make your picture bigger on the Zoom, and instead it looks like I'm trying to start a chat. I'm still like someone's old aunt.
Oh, it's impossible.
And now I just need to close it.
Now close it. Press unmute. Press unmute.
Now, what was that thing, the Grandmaster Flash thing? Love Grandmaster Flash. And it was on Facebook when people would tag pictures, they would put
Grandma.
Grandma, but they wouldn't see that it actually autofilled Grandmaster Flash. So many grandmas tagged themselves as Grandmaster Flash.
The most amazing thing that's ever happened. Do you know the one guy who like changed his mom's autofill? So anytime she wrote, I love you, it said like, I shit you. So love was changed to shit. And then it kept going, love, shit, 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 over and over. I don't know.
There's nothing better because I'm right on the precipice of being totally in the mom's camp of just like, I don't know how these machines work. There's a lot of blind faith involved.
Yeah. And at this point in our lives, I refuse to learn.
Yeah.
Look, if AIM was good enough for us kids.
Hey, I'll go back to Angel Fire any fucking day of the week. Tell me and I'll go.
Please there. You want to go first?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Okay, but I did make this way too big. And now get away, both of you. Here we go. I'm so excited about this. A hometown dump story.
I got one of those too. We got a few.
Yes.
I got a few of them.
I've never been more excited.
So
about
exciting.
It. Hey, MFM fam. I live in NYC, but have been staying with my parents in Wisconsin since March, waiting to see if I have a job when my restaurant reopens. I went with my dad to drop off some stuff at the dump when he casually said, did you hear about the man they found last summer who lived in a bunker behind here for 3 years? To which I replied, tell me everything.
Yep.
I just love the idea of someone saying, doing that to their dad.
Tell me everything.
Girl,
dad?
Open your mouth.
Spill it.
In 2014, a man from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, which is very strange because my friend Bradford is from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, which isn't, it's not a big town. It's very northern Wisconsin.
Wow.
2014, a man from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, named Jeremiah Button, was arrested for sexual assault of a child and child pornography. Realizing he faced decades in prison, he decided it was time to move. While out on bail, he biked 30 miles north to a rustic wooded area close to Marathon County's landfill. He dug out a bunker, lining the walls with tarps and cardboard, and brought in food and supplies one backpack load at a time. In 2016, right before his court date, Button left his car, wallet, and a note saying he was moving to Florida. For the next 3 years, Button hid in that hole in the ground, getting all of his necessities from the landfill nearby. Can you imagine the smell? It would be, I mean.
And the food, like, what are you eating? It's never.
It's all pine cones and peanut butter. You're just like a bird. You're a bird Boy Scout project is what you are, friend. You can just eat bird seed off a pine cone for all I care. Okay. He dug a well in a wet area of the woods, and he had a fire pit with a tin can chimney for warmth. Button even attached an antenna to a tree and used a system of 8 solar panels and numerous car batteries to power a TV, lights, and fans.
Holy shit. Oh, wait.
Yeah, this is insanity. Oh, wait, we can't leave this out. He planted marijuana in the woods, harvesting up to a pound a year.
What the fuck?
Jesus.
If he was not a fucking pedophile, I would be in awe of this person. But I
right, exactly.
hate him.
He, it's like, yeah, if you only had put your energy toward good, you could have been like the greatest camping dude
totally.
In the world. But instead, you're just a coward. But all this came to an end when a hiker came upon the well-concealed door of the bunker and curiously went inside to find Button. Could you imagine? No.
Don't open the door in the woods. Don't open a door in the fucking woods. Like,
if you see a door and it's been well concealed, get the fuck away from the door.
Don't open.
There's a reason.
That is not a murderino right fucking there. I'll tell you what.
And there's not a cute bear in a like a ballet tutu inside. It's a well concealed door.
It's a well concealed pedophile. Not a fucking dancing bear.
That's pretty much like one of two choices you have of what's in a, behind a well-concealed door. It's either that or the what's from The Princess Bride, the machine of
something pain.
The song. God damn
what
it!
What is it?
It's like the apocalypse machine.
Yeah, it's been too long.
Anyhow, don't say who cares, Stephen. We can't. I. There's nothing I care more about than the movie The Princess Bride.
Me too.
It's the greatest thing of all time.
It's the greatest.
Those scenes with Peter Falk and Fred Savage are so perfectly perfectly executed family film.
Mm-hmm.
A child being actually a very realistic child for the 80s, especially.
Like kind of a dick.
Touch bratty.
Yeah.
Bratty at first, broken down by the grandfather who's seen it all.
Yeah.
Seems like a goofball, but actually is telling the greatest story anyone's ever
it's
heard.
It's one of my favorite movies.
And the turn of when he's like, it's okay, you can tell me the kissing part.
Yeah.
At the end is the best thing that's ever
Grandpa,
happened to
America. Grandpa, will you come over and read it to me again tomorrow?
Oh, it's the cutest. Also, I just have to say, I met Fred Savage when I worked in episodic television. He's everything you want him to be and more.
Thank God.
He's exactly the same looking and sounding. The first time I heard his voice, I got weird, like, chills.
Dude,
like,
Wonder Year, like, keep your grew up out. With you.
Yeah, right?
And he's super
you know
nice.
This guy. He is, it's like he knows the responsibility on his shoulders of being Fred Savage, and he's delivering just hand over fist.
Love it, and has great taste in comedy. He's like so like talented.
Very talented, and now very, very hilarious, of course, and like doing it, been great since he was 8 years old, but then also now can direct like 3 camera television, which is very difficult.
This took a weird turn. Okay.
Guys, we're still in the middle of this. Can you please shut up so I can read the rest of this?
We're still in the first story, guys. Stop it.
It's just the door in the door in the forest is just
we needed beyond. A minute.
I had to talk. I had to talk my way out of the panic of that. Okay. So this hiker went inside curiously and found Button sleeping on a cot. Mm. So the hiker called 911, and after a standoff with police, Button finally came out and stated, "I'm a wanted man," and remarked that it was, quote, nice to talk to human beings.
Oh my God.
Last October, Button received 30 years in prison for his crimes, but the judge gave him a bonus to 230 days already served for his life on the lam. Thank you, ladies, for keeping me sane through this pandemic.
Wow.
My mom is now a big fan. Hi. Despite all the swearing.
Sorry, Mom.
Sorry. In parentheses, it says, oh, well, she says the same thing to me. I look forward to the day that I can bring her to a live show. Oh, so do
us
we.
Too.
Stay sexy and for the love of God, stay out of the forest, Marie.
Absolutely. Okay. All 3 of mine this week are grandparent stories.
Okay.
Which we always love.
Always.
Dear Karen, Georgia, and co. This isn't a murder story, but does fall under some of your categories of interest, namely badass grandparents, survival stories, and flash floods. In the summer, all our favorites.
Did you know flash floods are our interest?
They are now.
They are now. No, it's true. It's just, one more thing to put on the dating profile.
In the summer of 1976, my grandparents, who, by the way, Karen, she gave us their names, and they live up to the hype. Irvin and Nancy. Irvin.
Yes.
Not enough Irvins anymore.
Irvin. Wait, is this story about Magic Johnson?
All right. They had driven up to Estes Park, a small mountain town in Colorado, to go to their regular square dancing group. Of course. I know. The way my grandpa used to tell it, on the way home, a huge thunderstorm developed over the mountains, and the night was, quote, blacker than the inside of a cow.
Irvin, you old bullshitter, you.
It was the kind of Western state summer thunderstorms that are so intense that windshield wipers can't move fast enough to see clearly out of the windshield.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they had to pull over. They stayed in the car until a man started banging on their window and yelling at them to get out of their car and head for higher ground.
Oh, shit.
My grandparents ended up having to climb the steep canyon walls in their square dancing outfits in the pitch dark and pouring rain. I can fucking picture it now.
Shit.
Yeah. Swing your partner up the hill.
And do-si-do.
And do-si-do. As they climbed, a huge wall of water came down the canyon and swept away cars, houses, and parts of the road. Eventually, they had found a group of other people who had climbed up the canyon and took shelter in a van. They spent the night that way, stranded and waiting for the morning to be rescued. Down on the plains, my 19-year-old mom and her older brother had no idea what happened, except that their parents were supposed to be driving back through the flash-flooded canyon, and they hadn't arrived home.
Ooh.
They waited out most of the night with their own grandmother until finally getting a call late the next morning that their parents had been rescued by a helicopter and taken to one of the local high schools. The Big Thompson flood was one of the worst natural disasters in Colorado history. The storm that caused it dumped 12 inches of rain over the canyon in 4 hours.
That's a foot.
Huh?
That's a foot.
You're fucking right. 12 inches? That's not right.
12 inches is a foot.
Did she mean 12 feet?
No,
she had to mean.
I don't know.
That's almost the yearly total of rain.
I don't think it could rain 12 feet in 4 hours. I don't think.
But 12 inches of rain is like up to your calf.
Well, I bet it's enough.
We're from California, you guys. We don't. Rain is cute here.
Listen, look. You can do a flood. I think of 12 inches of rain is plenty to do a flood.
Well, a flood doctor, please email us and tell us what is a lot of rain.
Yeah, okay. That seems like a ton.
Great. But they do say that that's almost a yearly total of rain for the area in one, that they got it all in one night.
Oh, shit. So they weren't able to handle it.
No. On top of that, in the steep canyon, all of the water that fell on the hillsides collected in the Big Thompson River, which is why the flood was so swift and devastating. 143 people died, and many homes were destroyed. Some of the cars were washed down the river were only identifiable by their VIN number. The sediment in the water had completely stripped off the paint.
Wow. Shit.
My grandparents' car was never found. In 2006, 3 years before she died, my grandma got to meet the man who saved their lives, the guy who banged on the window.
Really?
Butch Hutchins. Of course that's his name. He said he had stayed away from the flood memorials because he was afraid to learn that he could have done more.
Oh,
but it's because of him that I got to meet both my grandparents. SSDGM, Maya.
Wow. Butch Hutchins.
Butch?
Was that the name? Butch Hutchins?
Butch Hutchins and Nancy and Irvin. Our best friends.
See, you know what? It's true. We don't take, because flooding doesn't affect us that much.
Yeah.
It is hard to imagine, but the idea that cars were unrecognizable.
Yeah.
And that's don't make me say that's the power of water. But that's you don't need 12 feet.
So you're the water doctor. Is what you're saying.
It's me.
Turns out.
Ask me AMA water.
My, do you know my first boyfriend died in a flash flood?
No.
Yeah. That's real sad.
That's horrible.
I know. Well, we weren't together. I was, I was young at the time when we dated, but then we got older, as you do, and he went off to go to college, and he and his best friend just got caught up in a flash flood, swept under a fucking semi, and
oh my God.
Died. He was such a wonderful person. It's really tragic.
Mike, that's horrible.
Mike Lewis, we met at Jewish camp.
Ugh.
I know. Sad.
Oh, it's so sad when people die young.
I know.
Okay. Ready for more bad stuff?
Always.
Cool. This is New Jersey's Bermuda Triangle underwater ghost town.
Yep. There we go. Hey, you did Lady of the Lake at a live show, right?
I believe so. Is that in one of the Carolinas?
Yeah.
Or
Atlanta, yeah. Maybe?
Oh, maybe.
Atlanta? I did LaLanne,
but
that's not Lady of the Lake.
Right. It's, okay.
It is a haunted lake, though.
I got sent that, but I thought you did it.
I think I did, but I can check for you.
I don't.
Okay, it says, this title is intriguing enough. After hearing about a fellow murderino's underwater ghost town in Minnesota 181, I immediately thought of a similar underwater ghost town near my hometown that is also referred to as New Jersey's Bermuda Triangle. Round Valley Reservoir was built in the 1960s in the small town of Lebanon, New Jersey. The state built two dams and flooded the small farming community that once existed at the bottom of the Cushetunk Valley. This included an old schoolhouse and several homes. As water poured in, the remains of the town sank more than 150 feet to the bottom of the reservoir to be forever lost, or so many thought. In the 70s, the reservoir and surrounding area became a peaceful place for boating, fishing, swimming, hiking, and scuba diving. There are videos from divers that have gone to the bottom of the reservoir and filmed the old building foundations that still exist below the surface. As many have enjoyed the waters, boaters began to go missing. Over the past 50 years, more than 24 people, that's 24 people, have gone missing and have died while boating, fishing in the reservoir.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a lot.
I believe the first disappearance was in the early 70s when two men and their boat went missing. All of them. Everything goes down together. Their bodies were never found again, but their boat hit the shore a few days after. 4 years later, two friends that went fishing were reported missing by their families. What? They were last seen sailing on the northern shore of the park when their empty canoe came to shore a few days after they were reported missing.
What?
The oddest story from the reservoir happened in the late 1980s. Two friends vanished on a fishing trip on March 18th, 1989. After submarine searches of the water, neither of the men were found. Flash forward to 1993, so like 4 years later, and the body of one of the men was found preserved, still fully dressed with boots on, when a fisherman caught the body with his hook.
What?
Although it's believed that most of the deaths were from drowning, locals suspected a wind vortex or bad energy from the former farm town are responsible for the strange deaths, pulling boats under the water. Mm. There are still bodies and boats that have yet to be found. Mystery of the reservoir still remains when a human foot without an owner was found in 2012. The FBI and the New Jersey State Police have scraped the bottom of the reservoir looking for human remains of the many who have perished there with no results. Growing up, my friends and I would go to this park all the time and often to do the nefarious activities that high schoolers do.
Fun, meaning have fun.
Just like hanging upside down like bats in trees and stuff. Boating, hiking, and camping around the reservoir myself, I was constantly on the lookout for ghost canoes or body parts. Sadly, nothing that crazy has ever happened to me there. My sister lived down the hill from the reservoir for a few years and said it became quite annoying when she would hear helicopters hovering over the park constantly. You would think they wouldn't allow boating anymore. Thank you for being two voices that I listen to while I'm in the midst of anxiety attacks and I need to calm myself down, or accompanying me on a long drive. Despite a pandemic, my partner and I are moving from NYC to Los Angeles, and I will need you to go across the country. Stay out of the forest, but also stay out of the water. Bree.
That's crazy to me because I feel like people who fish regularly and people who boat are pretty like experienced. You know what I mean? Like they're not just going to like tip out of their boat like probably you and I would do. They're like, they right. know the rules and they know what to do and what not to do and the yep. rules. And so that's just creepier. You know what I mean?
It's yes. And it's also when you think of like if two fishermen go out in the really early morning, mm-hmm. something could happen. And it's like, just say it's a rogue wave on a lake, which I don't even know if that's possible.
Who knows?
Rogue wave on a lake. Boom. They're in the water. It's over and no one saw it or heard it. Like that idea. And I won't even get into the reality of the Loch Ness Monster absolutely coming up and knocking you out of your
totally. I mean, that's what so I thought. Could, you know, water lake experts, lake doctors. Is a rogue wave possible?
Lake exports.
Experts. Jesus, I can't speak today. All right. This is another grandpa story. And it starts, hey, sexy ladies, mustache, and pets.
Kind of reductive, but I like it. I like it.
I recently got hooked on your podcast after my baby sister bought me an MFM logo pin, the proceeds of which go to Beam. My story has to do with the day I found out that my grandfather killed a man. Ooh. Grandpa was born in 1929 in a tiny town in Kentucky and dropped out of school in seventh grade because back then it was a totally legit thing to do. From what I know of my grandpa, he was a hands-on learner who could do just about any job you threw at him. This man taught himself how to repair lawnmowers. Who even does that these days? Amen.
Yeah.
He worked hard his whole life and had some amazing stories about being a ranch hand for a bit, and I will never tire of repeating his, quote, you could get yourself a quarter and buy a Coke and a bag of peanuts and see a movie stories. Simpler times. Anyway, in 2009, my grandpa had a sudden decline in health and needed hospice care. Our family had been at his house for the past several days, keeping my grandmother company as my grandpa passed and when my dad suggested we'd go to lunch. While at lunch, my dad somewhat casually mentioned that my grandpa had accidentally killed his best friend when they were young adults. Oh. Apparently, my grandpa and his friend would run moonshine because of fucking course they did. It was Kentucky. Mm. And on one such run, my grandpa was driving after drinking some of their product. He crashed the truck and ended up killing his friend in the accident.
Oh, no.
I know. My dad told me that grandpa never drank again and was, of course, heartbroken over his friend's death. Hours after my dad told me this tale, my grandpa ended his time on this earth. It was a totally wild experience for me to hear that my sweet grandpa had lived with this guilt and pain for 60 plus years. I was a sophomore in college when he passed, and this family story directly influenced my strong stance on drinking responsibly. Stay sexy, and for the love of God, don't drink and drive. S.
Oh, wow.
I know. So, like, thought of, like, carrying that with you your whole life. That would have...
Horrible.
Sad thing.
Because of what, I mean, we used to talk about that all the time, that I made so many incredibly irresponsible decisions in the 90s. And I could have very easily killed someone with my car. Very easily.
Totally.
So many times. Or even just gotten a DUI. Or just like...
ruined your own life. Yeah. Like, you're not...
You're not trying my hardest.
You're not special. You're not going to get away with something like that if you chance it. It's crazy.
And sometimes if you do get away with it, that you live with that horrible feeling of like, Jesus Christ, it's so irresponsible.
Totally.
All right.
I'm sorry I said that you're not special, everyone. You're all special to me.
It hurt me deeply.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
Dive into Hulu's chilling new original series, Under the Bridge.
It's a riveting adaptation of the true crime novel written by acclaimed author Rebecca Godfrey.
Based on shocking real-life events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a 14-year-old girl whose plan to meet up with friends ends in her shocking murder.
When an unlikely group of suspects emerge, a novelist and a detective race to solve the sinister crime.
This spellbinding series goes deep into a hidden subculture, revealing a small town's darkest secrets. Starring Emmy nominee Riley Keough and Oscar nominee Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays only on Hulu.
Goodbye.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Craft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient, because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all Made In, Made In.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's madeincookware.com. Goodbye.
Okay, well, this is a grandpa one too. And we're going back to Wisconsin. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Hello, all, human and animal. This isn't so much a hometown murder, but a connection to a serial killer. First, a little background. I grew up in a small town in rural southwest Wisconsin, and my grandpa is a funeral director. Growing up in a funeral home is probably what made me the murderino I am today. I swear, it's not really as weird as it sounds. One day when I was at home for a visit, my mom and I started talking about true crime, as one does. I asked her if grandpa had ever dealt with any murders in our town. She paused for a moment and then proceeded to tell me the best story I've heard about my grandpa. When my grandpa was in mortuary school, he and his classmate were called out to a crime scene to help with some bodies. That crime scene was none other than Ed Gein's house.
What? Holy shit.
Right? My grandpa was there when they arrested Ed Gein. What he says he remembers most of the house was that the normalness of the scene. There was a pot boiling on the stove like he was getting ready for lunch. Super creepy. Mm. No, that's not the creepiest one.
Wasn't he boiling a head or something?
I mean, that's, I don't know. He could have all, it could have been like top ramen in one pot and then his mother's skull in another. I can't remember. Now, because my grandpa was in mortuary school, he was there to deal with any dead bodies. He and his classmate had to collect and bag all the body parts that were found in Ed Gein's home, including the skin lamp and the nipple belt. Ew. Ugh. To make it worse, they found the body of his last victim. Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of, which is the woman that was in the, out in the garage. To make it worse, they found the body of his last victim, Bernice Warden, but had not found her head. Mm. Again, my grandpa had to help search the whole house for her head. Eventually, they found it wrapped up in a wool sailor coat in a trunk. My grandpa still has a scrapbook of all the news clippings of Ed Gein's case and arrest. If you ask him, he'll tell you about it.
Holy shit.
My grandpa is such a sweet, quiet, kind man. Hearing the story about him just makes me love him all that much more. Anyway, I love you and your podcast. It helps me through times of depression and makes me feel like I wasn't a weirdo for liking crime. Thanks for all you do. A bonus story. There was once a farmer that came into the funeral home having died of a supposed heart attack. When they were preparing the body, my grandpa found that there was actually a bullet in the man's heart. The police investigated and discovered the hired man that worked on the farm had actually shot the farmer. I can't remember the motivation, but he would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for my grandpa. That was from EJ. Thank you.
That's wow.
Unbelievable. Horrible. I mean, like, I don't care what business you decided you wanted to go into. Nobody was like, and this is where I'd like to end up.
Totally.
Ed Gein's house. Ed Gein's a mental meltdown home.
Yeah, there's nothing that prepares you, no matter how much, like, how comfortable you are working with dead bodies. There's nothing that's going to, like, mentally prepare you for that, probably. Hopefully.
Yeah, because you're supposed to work with dead bodies. Yeah. Some guy on a farm is not supposed to have a house full of dead bodies.
Totally.
Look, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it. It was wrong.
I think that was from Buddha who said that.
It was wrong. It was wrong what Ed Gein did / Buddha.
Strong stance by Karen Kilgariff.
- Osho. That's the old quote.
Okay, here's another dumpster.
Pinterest quote.
What?
I said that's my Pinterest quote.
Oh, got it.
Okay.
This one's a grandparent story and a dumpster treasure story.
This is full circle.
Uh-huh. Hello, friendos. Thank you. We sound like a cereal. I love it. I just listened to Minisode 182, where y'all asked for dumpster treasure stories, and I had to write in. My grandfather was the most influential person in my life and was such a steadfast source of advice and support during my challenging high school and college years. Hmm. When he died 2 years ago, after a two-year battle with ALS, I asked my grandmother if I could take his favorite blue cardigan, and she said yes, and then asked if I knew the story behind it. When her grandfather, my great-grandfather, was dropping off their garbage at the local dump in Wakefield, Michigan, he came across a box filled to the brim with old clothes. He dug through it and found the blue cardigan. After trying it on, he decided to keep it. My great-grandmother was appalled that he would take home a, quote, dumpster sweater and insisted that he get rid of it. However, my incredibly strong-willed Finnish great-grandfather decided to keep it and only wear it when he went to work. A couple years later, my great-grandmother found the cardigan sitting in his work case, and she tried to get rid of it again, but he found out and told her that he would give it away instead. And I could fucking picture this grandfather cardigan, blue cardigan, can't you?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
We probably have had it in our closets at some point in our lives.
Like the oyster shell button.
Uh-huh.
Four of them.
Maybe there's like a little...
bottom V.
Crocodile or on the lapel.
Sure.
My grandmother had just met my grandfather a few months prior, and they had just started dating. My great-grandfather loved my grandfather and decided to give him the cardigan. My grandfather came from a very, very poor family and decided to take it because most of his clothes were filled with holes and old. Fast forward 60 years, and that same blue cardigan is now sitting in my closet. I love that he gave it to somewhere like that the great-grandmother would have to see regularly. It's pretty great.
Also, it's like a gift until you go like, I got that at the dump.
Yeah, it was
here,
great.
Take this gift. You thought it was a wonderful gift.
It's crazy to think that my favorite blue cardigan was discovered in the early 1950s at a dump in Wakefield, Michigan. But I'm so glad I have it now. It makes me feel so much more connected to my grandfather and even my great-grandfather, who passed away a few weeks before I was born. Thank you guys for all you do. I am going on to school to get my master's in nursing, and I wouldn't be where I am today without you both normalizing getting help for my crippling anxiety and depression. Yay!
Oh, nice.
Y'all rock, stay sexy, and socially distance, y'all. Kindly, live.
Amazing story.
Hey.
Aww, I love it.
I miss thrifting so much.
It's very sad. I miss thrifting in the late 80s, 90s when there was actually true treasure to discover. Before eBay.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to do it yourself.
Yeah, and all the old stuff was there.
Yeah. And you could really find...
True treasure.
True.
Look, sometimes it smelled. Treasure. Sometimes you brought moths home to your...
Sometimes you were genuinely poor and just needed a shirt.
50 cents for a shirt sometimes.
You weren't being cute.
No.
You needed it.
But you also look cute while you did it.
But you look cute.
Because you could young.
Make cute choices. Because you were young and you have no idea.
Send us any story.
Complimentary.
At this point.
Yeah.
We just,
you know what's good.
Yeah.
You know what's compelling.
Right. MyFavoriteMurder@gmail.com, or you can go on our website, MyFavoriteMurder.com. There's a place to send in your hometowns, or there's like a forum on the fan cult too, where everyone just shares each other's stories. It's cool.
Stay sexy
and don't get murdered.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?